They're coming down to the 16th bowl. Catholic Boy is pulling away. He's so impressive today, the others didn't even have a prayer. Catholic Boy rolls in the run. Happy Travers.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Race the Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit leahcars.com. Leah Cars for life.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Wednesday morning, kicking off week number six here at Saratoga. I said it earlier on the Handicappers Report. Where has the time gone? August 19th. Already, but still 3 weeks to go, so plenty of racing and plenty of opportunities to cash some tickets. This morning on Racing Across America, let's get right to it. A little bit later on, we have Samantha Loud. She's one of the Saratoga Special staff. We'll talk a little Saratoga Special and what Samantha is doing here in Saratoga this season for the Special. She's one of their interns, the intern pipeline, which has been very productive over the years at the Saratoga Special, like Gabby Gaudette, Travis Stone, any number of racing industry people have gone through the pipeline. Samantha, I think, concentrates more on social media and marketing and whatnot, but we'll talk a little bit about that and more. Before that, Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times Union. We do the TU OTB challenge every day, and OTB has some picks and the Matrix in the TU. So we have a nice relationship with the Times Union, and Tim does a great job, as does the Times Union overall, covering the meet. We'll talk about the meet so far, Travers, Alabama, maybe some Kentucky Derby thoughts with Tim. But we're going to kick things off, another Gary Contessa interview. If you've been watching over the past couple of weeks, you know Gary has jumped on board to go do some on-the-road interviews, as it were. And this morning we're going to watch an interview with trainer Shug McGahee. So up next, Gary Contessa and Shug McGahee.
Contessa with Capital OTB, sitting at the barn of Shug McGahee, Hall of Fame trainer, on what's turning out to be a beautiful Saratoga Friday, day before the Travers. Morning, Shug. Morning, happy to Gary. Have you on the show here.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, Shug, we're trying to show a different side of the people in our game. And I'd like to know, where did you tell us about growing up, Shug McGahee? Where you came, did you grow up as a horse person, or where did horses enter your life?
Well, I grew up in Lexington, Kentucky, so I was around the atmosphere a little bit. My parents had nothing to do with it. My father would take me out when the horses came to town, in April and for a day, and in October for a day. And I kind of got interested in the atmosphere. And when I got old enough to drive, after school, then I would kind of, when the horses came to town, I'd go over there and I'd pick up the kind of the guts of the racing form that people had thrown away and take it home and sort of read it. And then, I was around some show horse stuff, auctions. Walt Robertson and his brother Jimmy were good friends of mine. They were big in the walking horse part of it. And then I was going to college, and after my second year, I drew a high draft lottery number, and I asked my parents, how about me staying out a semester? And they said, okay, but you got to get a job. And I had a friend that had 8 or 9 horses over at Keeneland at the time. It was in the summertime, so I went over and asked him for a job, and he gave me a job, walking hots. So I was 7 days a week, $40 a week, and I loved every minute of it. I loved what I was learning there a lot more than what I was learning in school, so I just kind of took it from there.
And who was that? Who were you working for? Who was your first job?
David Carr. He's around Parks now, working as a bloodstock agent. He was from Lexington. Knew him, knew his wife.
Now, you used that, and once you got the bug, you decided you wanted to stay in this business, correct?
Yeah, no doubt. I had, after I'd been around for, just a little while, I knew I wasn't going to go back to school.
So now, after Dave Carr, did you move up in his organization, or did you go on to work for somebody else after that?
Well, I mean, for him, I walked hots for a couple of months, and then we went over to Turfway was in Latonia. and started rubbing one. And, you know, then we went through the winter at Old Liberty Bell and came back. And then I went to work for a guy that had a bigger string and a little bit more depth to it, named Jimmy Cowden. It was Poplar Hill Farm, and he had, you know, a few stakes quality kind of horses in a bigger stable, pretty much mixed. Good guy. Worked for him for a while, and then came back to Kentucky and that summer, late summer, and I went to work for a guy named John Fulton. It's still around South America, does a lot of bloodstock work down there, and you know, more stallions and that kind of stuff. And he was working for Mr. Steinbrenner at the time, Kinsman Farm. And so we were around Hialeah and those places. I was just rubbing horses, but taking a little bit more of an active role than just being, you know, a groom. And, you know, we went up to a minor league baseball game, and Mr. Steinbrenner came down and said, I need somebody to go to the farm and sort of leg up some two-year-olds. Our guy's leaving. He said, well, how about you going? Well, I said, sure, I'll go, but I wasn't prepared to go, but I went. But I said, I'm not going to be around there at breaking yearlings time. So then we went to Kentucky, and he wanted everybody to go back to the farm, and I said, I'm not going back to the farm. And that's when I hooked up. I had a friend, Mike Bell, that was working for Frank Whiteley, and I got a hold of him, and he sort of mentored me a little bit during these times. We were friends, and he said, get on down here. So that was probably in the fall of Ruffian's two-year-old year, whatever year that was, 74 or something. And then so I worked down there all winter. He put me in charge of a barn, and then I came back. He sent me to New York with four horses, a bull ruler, another filly out of Moccasin, a big colt that belonged to the Bancroft, Penny but called by Damascus, and another horse by Herbiger. And the story behind him was Mr. Whiteley went to the Keeneland sale to buy Wajima for Raymond Guest, and when he got down there, they had a budget, and he told Mr. Guest, he said, we ain't got enough money. And he said, well, just we'll go another 100,000 or whatever it was, and they didn't get him. And so they ended up buying the Herbiger at a lot lesser price. And, you know, we went up there, and they ran fine. It was, and then David Whiteley was in California, and he came back, and then he needed an assistant. His assistant stayed out there, so I went to work for him, and then I worked for him until the winter of 1979.
I remember back then, Frank Whiteley scared the heck out of me. I mean, you know, I'd be standing at the rail, and if Frank came over, he was just this big, gruff, tough trainer. Was he a tough guy to work for?
Well, I mean, he was demanding,
right?
But he was a great guy, great man, great trainer, as well as David. And but he you know, he would, you know, you might leave a screen unsnapped, and he'd walk all the way down there and snap it himself and then point at you, you know, so you didn't make that mistake again.
Right.
But he was, you know, he was good to me. You know, they were hard on the help, so there was a lot of days that, you know, I was looking at taking care of eight or something, you know. But
right.
It was a wonderful experience being with them, and you know, a lot of the leg work that I do now comes from my experience there.
So you would consider Frank and David basically your mentors?
Yes, very much so.
And you went on your own in 1979.
1979, I was in California with David. We took about 12 horses at the most, but they were nice horses. There were, Tiller was one of them, a horse called Instrument Landing that just about beat Spectacular Bid in the Young American that fall.
Strike your colors on the outside. Middle of the track, Instrument Landing ranging up. Through the stretch, Strike Your Colors gets to the front by a head. Spectacular Bid on the inside, second, and Instrument Landing on the outside.
And a horse called French Colonial, that you remember, ran on the grass. And, And that was the winner, Peter Brandt bought Weya off Mr. Penna, and she came into our barn, so I was around her. And then I had a couple of friends that came out from Kentucky, Reynolds Bell, that's family. He was running Mill Ridge Farm at the time for his family, and a guy named Bill O'Neill that ran Wamazon Farm and used to run all the two-year-old races at Keeneland. And they, you know, we'd go to lunch and then we'd go to dinner because I was working, and they would go to the races and they were meeting with clients. And so they were going to Abilene, Texas to meet with a guy that they'd made acquaintance with that had bought a bunch of fillies. He wanted to breed them, and they're all well-bred fillies. He bought them as yearlings, and he had some horses on the West Coast. He wanted a presence on the East Coast, so they recommended me, and they came out there to, they flew to California to interview me, and I went to work for them like the next Saturday.
And you brought those horses to New York?
Nope, I brought those horses to Keeneland. I called, everybody in racing should understand this. I called Bill Greeley and hired Battle. Bill Greeley was the president of Keeneland. Hired Battle was the secretary that was here one time. And I told them both, I said, I got like 12 two-year-olds, I can't help you. But I need stalls, and I hope I can help you in the long run. They said, bring them on. Most people, as you know, Gary, would say, no, we'll go somewhere else. But those two guys had the vision, let's try to help a young guy, and maybe he'll help us out in the long run, and I hope I did.
Right. It's even like when I went on my own, I called Bobby Kalina at Monmouth, and I said, Bobby, I need like 10 or 12 stalls. And he said, they better not be two-year-olds. So that's the way it is. Nobody wanted two-year-olds because it's such a waiting game. But those guys did have vision, and I'm sure you repaid them many times over the years.
Well, I sure hope so, because they, you know, they were great to me to give me the opportunity, because I don't know what I would have done. You know, I mean, I tried to go to Delaware after Keeneland, and they turned me down. I ended up at Rockingham. Mike and I both did, Mike Bill, and which was a good experience. And then it kind of got going from there. And then that winter, we went to Hot Springs, and we did really well. I ran like 24 horses, won 13 races, but the guy died. And all the horses were left to his underage kids, and the trustees, they didn't understand anything about racing. They told me, they said, listen, you can race out what you got, but understandably so, we can't be buying, you know, spending $100,000 on a yearling. The chances are it ain't gonna be any good. And so it kind of fizzled its way out. I came back to Kentucky that fall. I had two. One of them belonged half to me, and one of them belonged to Bill O'Neill. And my friend just helped me. You know, they helped me get started. They brought horses in, and it's sort of the same way I see my son doing now down at Keeneland. It's a lot of, you know, it's some of his friends, it's some of my friends, and they're getting him in horses, and it kind of went from there. And then we went to Hot Springs, and I took a couple of horses down there for Dr. Lavin, the partner he had, Henry Meyer, great people. And he hooked me up with Loblolly then. And the reason, Joe Canny had them all, but he wanted an outlet for the horses that wouldn't do in New York to come to Kentucky or be able to race someplace that's a little bit easier. And I ended up getting lucky because it was Cox's Ridge first year at stud. And so he told Joe Canny, he said, we got two nice colts, yearlings at Claiborne. You go pick out the one you want. And one of them was a homebred, and the other one was one Joe had bought. And Joe took a lot of pride in what he bought, and he did a very, very good job buying horses at that time, like in the 40-50 range. So he picked out a horse called Butler Eddie, and he gave me a horse called Van Landingham. Butler Eddie didn't turn out. Van Landingham was a champion. So, you know, we kind of went from there. I came up here. I brought him and five other horses, and when I came back from here, I went to Belmont. I remember I was at Keeneland, and I'd gone and I was playing golf with some friends of mine. You know, we had like 10:30 or something, so there wasn't any cell phones or anything. So I went to the pay phone and called back to the barn, and they said, Seth Hancock wants you to call him. So I called him, and he said, Phipps's are looking for a trainer. If you're interested, your name came up. I said, well, obviously, I'd be interested. And he said, well, can you get to the farm right now? I said, no, I made this game. As soon as it's over with, I'll be there. He says, I leave at 3. I said, I'll be there. And so we called Denny Phipps and made arrangements to meet him on, I'll never forget the day, October the 5th, 1985. And Van Lanningham was in the Jockey Club Gold Cup that day. I remember driving out to the Phipps' house. You know, I was just 35, 36, 37 years old, little guy from Kentucky. I'm going out here to see them. I was scared to death. It's raining as hard as it could rain. Got there, he immediately put me at ease, and so we talked about it, and you know, so then I took that job. Probably that was on a set. Well, Van Lanningham won the Gold Cup that afternoon. He gave the trophy, and you know, I took the job that week, and you know, I've been here ever since.
Boy, it's what a stable to pick up, and it's been so good for you. 240 graded stake wins for you in your illustrious career. That just boggles my mind. And another interesting thing, you're the second leading trainer in number of Breeders' Cup wins with 9, correct?
Yes.
And that's just an amazing stat to me. I mean, what a career it's been for you.
Well, it has been. You know, the when I came to the Phipps's, you know, I figured that, you know, I'm going to get these horses, we're going to do some good, but it kind of overpowered whatever I thought, especially early on, you know, with Purcell Ensign and Seeking the Gold and Easy Gore and, you know, some of those, Polish Navy, and, you know, then you get Heavenly Prize and Inside Information, you know, all Hall of Fame horses. And you know, they were wonderful to me and wonderful to work for, and, you know, it would – They're people that I would never, ever forget, you know, I lived to be 200.
It was just one great horse after another.
Yeah.
And then in 1988, you were with the Phipps's?
Yes.
And you won an Eclipse Award, correct?
Yes, won the Eclipse Award in 88, but we had Purcell Ensign won the Breeders' Cup, and Easy Gore won, you know, he was a champion two-year-old, and, you know, I think I'd won 15 Grade 1 stakes that year, tied with Lucas, and... So we were lucky enough to win the Eclipse Award, and that was, you know, obviously that was something that, you know, that I wanted.
Very special.
Well, yeah, very special. When I got in that position, it wasn't something I thought about, but it was something that when I got sort of in that position at the fall of the year that I sort of had on my mind, that might be a pretty good thing to win.
Here comes Purcell Ensign, unleashing a furious run on the outside, but it is still winning colors. Goodbye, Halo. Purcell Ensign, a 16th of a mile. Purcell Ensign, a dramatic finish, and here is the wire, and it is Purcell Ensign there with winning colors in a photo.
Now, this has got to be the most difficult question I'm going to ask you today, and it doesn't even have to have an answer, but all the great horses that have come through this barn, you've rattled off the names of a bunch of them. It doesn't have to be your best horse. Who is your favorite horse? Every trainer has a horse that's close to their heart. Maybe it's just for an obscure reason. What horse do you remember out of all those horses as a horse that's close to your heart?
Gary, I think Seeking the Gold. I really enjoyed training Seeking the Gold. He didn't have the ability that some of the others did, but he was 110%. I knew when I took him over, he was going to run his race.
And was he personable? Was he a kind of horse that you really could get attached to?
He's easy to train.
Yeah.
He was easy to train, and I liked him. And it was funny, my oldest son was, he was 7, 8 months old. We'd gone home to Kentucky for Christmas, and, you know, I got him up. I had Personal Flag and the Widener and Seeking the Gold in the last race at Hialeah, in a maiden race, first start. And so we gathered him up, and away we went and caught a 6 o'clock plane or something back to my Fort Lauderdale, and changed clothes and went to Hialeah. Personal Flag won the Widener. And they came, they used to take you upstairs to a little press conference. Well, I had one the next race. So Seeking the Gold won pretty easy and kind of in the dark. So they took me upstairs for the press conference. They didn't want to know anything about Personal Flag. All they wanted to know about Seeking the Gold. And so, you know, then he won 4 in a row. He won 2 allowance races, and he won the Swale. But Randy Romero was riding him, and he'd come back and tell me how easy he was winning. I mean, he wasn't hitting him or anything, but I could tell after his races it was taking a little bit more out of him than Randy was wanting to tell me, because he'd be a little slow eating and might get a little dry on you. Then I brought him back and ran him into Gotham, and I think the horse of the Jannies, that was a pretty good horse that Charlie Hadry had. He might not have been beat either at the time. He went one, we were second. Ran him back in the wood, it was the same thing. And so we went to the Derby. We shouldn't have, in hindsight. I think he went finished fifth or sixth or something. Then I backed off of him, and we came to I think I ran him in the Reaver Ridge at that time, which is now the Woody Stevens. He won. I ran him in the Dwyer, and he won that. And so 49er was around at the time, and Woody had told everybody he was going to run him in Jim Dandy, because Pat Day was riding both horses. So one day, somebody told me, said, Woody's going to get him to put a race up at Monmouth. He's going to run it down there. Julie's going down there and ride him, Julie Crone. And then he's going to run back in the Haskell. I said, no, he's not. He's going to run the Jim Dandy. He said, well, that's what he told me this morning. So I went to, we were going to run in the Haskell. And I went to Freddie Amy, who was Pat Day's agent. I said, we got a problem. I said, what's that? He said, 49er might be going to run in the Haskell. He said, no, he's not. He's going to run the Jim Dandy. I said, you better find out. And so he came back. He said, you're right. I said, all I want is I don't want to be hung up for a job, because there's plenty of them around. I'd like to have Pat Day, but if I don't have Pat Day, I could get Chris McCarron or somebody that would fit him. And so they came back and said, we'll ride him. Ran him, and he got beat a nose in the Haskell of 49. Came back up here and ran back in the Traverse, same thing. Got beat a nose in the Traverse. We were nose in front before the wire, nose behind at the wire, and a nose in front at the wire. But that was a little bit of Woody's trickery, too, as he told McCarron, he said, listen, he said, they're going to try to come up on the inside of you. Shut the door on them. And he did, and we had to go around. But, I was a kid. He was a genius. So.
Right, race riding.
Yeah. Seth said to me the next day, he said, what are you disappointed about? I said, well, I'm disappointed. He was kind of mad that I'd said that. And I said, well, I'm disappointed we got beat, but I'm proud of the way he ran, And, obviously 49er right now is a nose better than him. Reminds me of what Parcells has always told me about those football players. He said, if they get in a 40-yard dash and one of them gets beat that far, they'll come back and tell you, I can't beat that guy.
That's great. This has been a great, enlightening interview. I can't thank you enough for this. I've learned about you. I've learned things about you that I didn't know, and I really thank you for being here and for joining us, sir.
Well, Gary, thanks for having me.
This has been Gary Contessa with Capital OTB and Hall of Famer Shug McGahee. Thank you.
No track, no problem. There's no better place to follow the Saratoga race meet than Capital OTB and OTB TV. With our live TV shows from the Saratoga backstretch and our live remotes, all the information you need is right here. Each and every day of the Saratoga meet, we talk with all the top trainers, jockeys, handicappers, and racing personalities. So stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV this racing season and win more.
It. Watch me. I got it. Hey! I got something that makes me want to shout.
tell me what it's all about. I gotta move. Now tell me what to do. If you don't, brothers and sisters, then you won't know what it's all about.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Wednesday morning, live from Saratoga. Seth Merrow in the studio, as it were, and you just saw a tape piece from Gary Contessa with Shug McGahee. And again, thanks to Mick Richards on our staff for going out and putting that together as well. Speaking of live in the studio, we are joined now by our friend Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times. You know, I always like to get Tim over here to talk a little bit about the meet, and we've waited until past the halfway point to get some thoughts on what's happened so far. Tim, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. I like this set.
It's nice, right?
I feel like I'm in the big time.
Right in front of Clare Court. Randy Moss at one point was in here a few years ago and said the best set in all of television horse racing.
I would have to agree because it's the only set I've ever been on, so absolutely.
Very good. Another beautiful day up here in Saratoga. And I'll ask you, because I said it on the handicapper support, and over the past week I've said it a couple times. So far, it's played out. We've seen the superstars up here, so it's bad enough that the fans can't come in and see a great season of racing. But, man, the weather's been great this year, too. It's just so disappointing that people can't show up.
I know. It is. I think we've had one day that the races were washed off, I think. Maybe.
And I don't think it was all the turf races that day.
No, I don't think it was. And it was early in the meet because I remember Jack Knowlton was the guest handicapper. And he was all ticked off that he had that he didn't get the main track picks in that he wanted. So, but that's another story for another day. But yeah, the weather's been just phenomenal. I mean, how can you not like what we've had up here? It's, and you just feel bad for the people that can't come in here because, you know, and Naira would have been, I would think they would have broken all kinds
knocked
of attendance records here, and you know, with his the law being here in the Travers, they would have. They would have had the 50,000 for sure at the capped attendance. But, yeah, it's just you cannot argue with the weather one bit. Gosh, now I say that, it'll rain every day. But, no, it has been phenomenal. You're right.
Absolutely. And, again, it's disappointing that people haven't been able to come. But they've been making the most of it, going to the watch parties, and certainly playing from home with the handle and whatnot. Before we get into the meet itself, let's alert people. I always like to tell a little Times Union, because we have the OTB side of that as well. Typically every day there are four handicappers in there. The two Times Union handicappers, yourself and Anthony Affronti, one of the OTB handicappers cycles in every day, and then you have a guest handicapper, so folks can find the selections there. There's also, for OTB, we have the Matrix, we have the Charity Bet every day. You and Affronti, it's always kind of funny that going back and forth in the bankroll, going back to the old Mike Jarbo days. We miss Mike, certainly,
yeah.
But Anthony Affronti has jumped in very nicely and filled in, and the bankroll is kind of fun to watch you guys go back and forth with.
You haven't mentioned the other thing.
I was going to get to that. I was leaving that for last.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll let you talk about that.
Leave the best for last. But Affronti had a great in the bankroll when I was reading on Friday. Oh, he was talking about you a couple of years ago with the cast on, and he likened you to Rear Window, with Jimmy Stewart and Rear Window.
But the thing is, Affronti was wrong because I didn't have a cast on. It was just that my knee was all screwed up, and I had to get knee replacement surgery. But it was a good effort by young Affronti, who I call Herbie, by the way, because he just looks like a Herbie to me. I mean, most people won't get that. They probably think I'm insane, but he's just Herbie to me for the rest of all time.
Is there other Herbie references in the bankroll?
I haven't read all of them yet. He's Herbie forever.
But so there's the consensus box. There's the OTB side of things. The charity bets have been kind of interesting. If people want to follow those charity bets, we've been doing all right for
charities. You guys have been doing a good job of that.
And there are five different charities that will benefit at the end of the meet, and we're putting some money together. But what you were alluding to, every day, either you or Affronti, you alternate for the Times Union, and then there are five of us for OTB. Myself, Mike Callahan is in today. Sully Crotty does Thursdays. Our president, John Signor, does Fridays. Brian Edo does Saturdays, and I do Sundays. And we alternate in the Times Union versus OTB battle, which the last couple of years has come down to the wire. It's been a lot of fun. I'm not sure that's going to work out this year. The Times Union, the current score, 15-6-3. 15 wins for the TU, 6 for OTB, and 3 ties. I'd throw it out there.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, you got all those handicappers. And Fernie and I feel like we're at the Little Bighorn, getting surrounded. But so far, we're throwing enough bullets at you that we're winning. But, you know, I think, I'm convinced, I'm sure that you guys will come back. That's what I have to say, right? This is your show. But I'm convinced that you guys will come back. And if not, John Signer is going to have 5 different guys in there next year.
As I say, the last couple of – and it, 1 year we got out to a big lead, right, and there was a comeback. And then the next year it was the other way around. And I forget which year it was. This year, I mean, we're down to 16 days and we're down 9. So if we're starting our comeback, we have to start now. But again, that's fun to watch too. You can pick up the Times Union every day and see how OTB does. Particularly now, see if we can make the comeback.
I know. If we win, we should get free membership into the 7-Eleven for the rest of our lives.
The club. I'll find out if that works.
Talk to Big Daddy John.
It has been, though. I lost one day. I had 5 winners one Sunday, and a frontie came up with 6. It's been that kind of a year.
It has been. It's you know, and I think that, I'm not going to tell tales out of school, but you've been more than holding your own for the OTB squad. I would think that, you know, at the midway point, just past the midway point, you're their MVP.
We'll see if I can keep that up.
I'm 9-1-1, by the way.
I was going to say, you have your own MVP status currently for the Times Union for overall. So we'll see how that holds up through the end of the meet. Again, pick up a Times Union, follow that, go to the charity place, but also the consensus box can give you some nice thoughts during the afternoon. As everybody's doing pretty well. I mean, everybody, you know, you and Affronte, you're both came out of Sunday hovering right around the 70 win mark, yeah, which is, you know, as public handicappers.
We're never going to catch the mad scientist from the special. Though.
John Chapazian from
he's
the special.
He's having a great meet.
He's the one we all have to kind of chase. But yeah, so far, so good, as I say, with the public handicappers. And again, we tout the Times Union. We're happy to participate with the Times Union in the Saratoga season every year. Speaking of the Saratoga season, let's get to it a little bit. And I pulled up the stretch run last weekend to the Alabama. And I know you have talked to the connections of the Alabama before and subsequently afterwards. Just, you know, boy, this effort. The question mark was going to be the distance. And I just thought, like, 'tis the law. She came in with the experience and kind of the leader in the clubhouse status. As 'tis the law was the leading three-year-old male, she, 2 or 3 weeks ago, to me, was the leading female, maybe surpassed a couple of weeks ago by Gamine. But I thought she had the experience to be the one to tilt towards, so I went towards her. I wasn't quite expecting this kind of a performance, so she was as spectacular last Saturday as 'tis the law was 2 weeks ago.
There's no question about that, Seth, and, you know, I think her final margin was 3.5 at the Alabama. It could have been 10.5. I mean, that was just a tour de force effort by this filly, and, you know, and the funny thing is about her, 3 races ago, she won at 16-1. You know, and it's a mind-boggling that a horse like that could go off at those odds. And now people are talking about the Oaks, the big showdown with Gamine. I was talking to Baffert on Sunday, and I asked him what he thought. And he goes, well, I know what Kenny should do. He said he should run in the Derby and the Preakness. Tongue firmly in cheek on that, by the way. But, you know, that's, you know, Swiss Skydiver has done, she's already proven herself going long. I mean, Gamine is fabulous as she looked in the Acorn and the Test. She hasn't gone past a mile, I don't believe. And I think there's something to that. I think it's a very, very intriguing Oaks, and I would give the advantage right now to Swiss Skydiver, but, you know, there'll be other fillies in there too. Like Speech is a pretty good filly. That, I mean, people can't sleep on her, but I think there's some people that might even think that the Oaks is more appealing than the Derby.
Well, I said this earlier during the handicappers board. How often does this happen? You get the horses that are at the top of their division, And one wins spectacularly one week, one wins spectacularly the next week, and then 3 weeks later they meet up. It just never happens that you get those duels that play out so perfectly as this Oaks is.
You know, and that's the sad thing again with the COVID pandemic. You know, it would have been phenomenal to see these races in front of 100,000 people, 150,000 people down at Churchill. And now, you know, I don't know what it's going to end up being down there. If I don't even know if they're going to reverse course and possibly close the doors, which might seem the safest thing to do since Kentucky's having problems. But there's no doubt that that weekend is going to be extra special. And it's going to be so weird because Saratoga will still be going on.
Yeah.
It's just a weird, weird, weird time for sports and horse racing, too. And again, I don't know if I'm going to be at the Derby or if I'm going to be here, but I don't think you can go wrong at either place.
Yeah, but, that's the truth. I don't think you can go wrong,
you know,
at either place. You and I were talking last week. As I say, you've talked to the owners and the connections of Swiss Guide ever before and after the race, and yet a good story of how the horse got its name.
Yes. Now, Peter Callahan, the owner, was sleeping one Sunday morning in November of 2018, and his phone started pinging. And it was his eldest granddaughter, Callie, sending him a text video from, she was studying abroad, and she was jumping out of a airplane parachuting over the Swiss Alps. And Peter got the text, saw the video, and he said he almost fell out of bed because he was shocked that his granddaughter, his eldest of seven grandkids, was jumping out of an airplane over the Swiss Alps. So hence the name Swiss Skydiver.
Yeah, nice.
And you know, I talked to Callie and she said she's 22 years old, she just graduated from Marist. And she just said that she said, if I was ever in the Swiss Alps, I'm going to jump out of an airplane. So she was in the Swiss Alps, and she jumped out of an airplane.
I don't know if that's everybody's go-to for going to the Alps.
Well, she did with a tandem. It's not like she jumped out on her own. She had an instructor with her. But, man, you couldn't have given me all the whiskey in Ireland. I'm not going to jump out of an airplane over anything.
Yeah, it seems like the air is a little thin up there. I wonder if the parachute is going to work as well as it, but it obviously did.
And, she's 15,000 feet up, she said.
Nah,
I can't go 15 feet up.
Hence we come with the name. So good story there. Let's shift attention to the real story of the meet, obviously, and you have talked quite a bit with Barclay and Jack Knowlton and team. You were over at Pinnell's for the Belmont watch party, as were we. Travers was a little bit different with some of the owners being allowed over here. Let's take a look at the stretch run of the Travers. And before we go on to where Tisdale Law is now, because you were over there this morning as well, let's just go back to the Travers and talk about this effort. Because as I say, for me, a lot of folks were looking at Uncle Chuck, but I just felt Tisdale Law was coming in with so much experience. He was the leader in the class. And boy, this, you know, you talk about, we looked at the effort from Swiss Sky, but look at Manny just geared down here, a 16th of a mile away. This was phenomenal.
And he ended up having like the fourth fastest time in Travers history. I mean, if he would have ridden the horse to the wire, I don't think he would have beaten Arrogate's time, but he could have been in the top two or three. Uncle Chuck came in with the two wins, impressive as they were out in California, but it wasn't, he did not have the experience that Tis the Law had. I likened it to, you know, Tis the Law being the established college athlete going up against the high school athlete who's going to be good. I mean, I still think Uncle Chuck is going to be good.
Oh, yeah.
But he just ran into a more experienced, seasoned horse. And, you know, Tis the Law just ate his lunch on that day. And, you know, he just proved once again. I mean, I thought, I picked Tis the Law, but I'm still waiting to see if there's going to be a chink in the armor. But I haven't seen it, and I don't know if we are going to see it. I mean, this horse has stayed together for a long, long time, which you just have to give Barclay so much credit for being able to have this horse in optimum peak condition since the Holy Bull back in February. I mean, this horse is just, he's an iron horse, and he doesn't seem to, there's nothing. The only thing that can beat him, I think, is, like we talked off camera, is himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he's got so much talent.
And let's talk about, again, you were over there this morning, and I pulled up some video and a photo from your Twitter feed this morning. And again, if folks want to look, it's at TJ Wilkin is the Twitter handle. And you really bring Saratoga to people. Some nice videos and nice photos during the meet. So I'd highly recommend following you on Twitter. But here's the horse out on the track. You took a little video this morning. You and I were talking before you sat down, and you said, boy, when he's out there on the track in the morning, you see his competitive spirit.
Yeah, he was, I mean, that second time around on his gallop, and that's Robin Smullen in the irons, the assistant trainer. There was a horse from Todd Pletcher that was out there, and he went after him. I mean, the horse was a little bit ahead of Tis the Law, and he went after him like he was in a race. He does that all the time. I mean, he just is ultra competitive. He wants the competition, and, you know, Robin and Heather Smullen, who's been riding him in the works, they really got to throttle him down not to do that. But that's the way this horse is. He's got that killer mentality. I mean, LeBron James would love playing with this guy. I mean, he's just that kind of horse that he doesn't want to take any prisoners, no matter where he is. I mean, there was a horse that got loose today out in the barn area, and he was being walked. And his eyes, his ears perked up, and he knew and they had to put him in the stall. He probably would have went after him. I mean, that's just the way this horse is, and you know, I don't think we none of us know what they have over there, because Manny has never had to ask him for everything he's got. He might have to do it in Kentucky, or maybe he won't. But you know, this horse is just. They say, you know, that it's an overused term. They say breeds different air. I think he does.
Yeah.
He's really that good.
Yeah, New York bred, and they're good for Jack Knowlton and Sakatoga. They focus on New York breds. They've stuck with Barkley Tag, and it's paying off for him again, as it did with Funny Side a number of years ago. Tim, we'll wrap it up before we go. Just any thoughts overall on the meet so far? I pulled up the human stats after Sunday's races. Jose Ortiz at 38, Irod Ortiz at 37, Joel Rosario 30, Castellano at 19, but it's coming down to the Ortiz brothers on the jockey side. Trainer side has been a lot of fun. Let's see if it continues for the next 3 weeks, but currently tied, Chad Brown and Todd Pletcher with 18, Clement just behind with 16, and Mike Maker with 15. Linda Rice is doing well with 12, Asmussen just behind that one. Jimmy Bond's having a very good meet percentage-wise, 7 for 27 there. So there have been some notable names underneath with good meets, but on the top end, Chad and Todd, Christoph, and Mike Maker have done very well so far.
They have, and you know, last year at this time, the training race was basically over.
Oh, yeah.
Chad had like a 10-race lead on everybody else. I don't think the winner of the training – no, I bet money on the winner of the training title isn't going to have 40 wins this year,
yeah.
I wouldn't think. At the end, I think Chad probably will win because he's got the numbers, he's got the horses. Christoph Clement had a great meet, like you said, but he started to slow down a little bit. Maybe he's got to keep your eye on David Donk after he had three on Saturday or Sunday.
All at good prices.
They did. Yeah. They did. I mean, it's sometimes it's a different guy every day, but, you know, it's and as far as the jockeys go, you know, all the top three are all staying here. They're not going to Kentucky.
All right.
So, you know, they're your Tease brothers, you figure they'll battle until the end. And, you know, but Joel Rosario's having a great meet.
Yeah.
And so I think that it'll be interesting to watch the jocks race down to those last 3 weeks. If I was the bet, I think I would take Jose.
It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Again, they're neck and neck right now, and I think that will continue over the night. The trainers, I'm not sure, but I think the jockey's title will go right down to the wire. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch, and one of the ways to watch is to follow Tim Wilkin in the Albany Times Union. As I say, at TJ Wilkin is the Twitter handle, and I recommend that as well, as you bring the photos and the video for the people who can't be up here this year. Tim, we're hoping there's a little fall apart for you in a front eight as far as the TU versus OTV. We need you to fall apart a little
bit.
That's
very possible. But before I go, I got to let you know, Stewart's is going to start selling Tis the Law ice cream.
Oh, nice. Do we know what the flavor is yet?
I think the Jack Knowlton has been sworn to secrecy.
Oh, okay. There's an unveil on that.
I would hope it's chocolate.
Very nice. All right.
Supposedly that's coming soon.
So we'll be looking for that. Tim, appreciate the visit.
Thank you, Seth. You do great work.
I appreciate that. Tim Wilkin from the Albany Times Union. We'll take a break. Continue on this Wednesday morning racing across America. Stay tuned.
BetWare's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region? Tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Thank you. I think what you guys are doing is awesome.
Seth, you do a great job too. So thank you, and I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate watching your show every day.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Wednesday morning. Wednesday morning typically means a visit from Tom Law of the Saratoga Special, but Tom couldn't make it in today, but he'll jump on tomorrow to take a look, a preview at the New York Turf Riders, really the highlight of the jump season up here at Saratoga. So we'll have Tom tomorrow. But we do have a Saratoga Special guest. We have Samantha Loud. She's an intern this year, and I thought we'd get her over here, because typically during the year we'll get one or two of the Saratoga Special interns, as the intern ship at the Saratoga Special has been a pipeline to the racing industry. I don't know whether that's where Samantha is aimed or not, but Gabby Gaudette started at the Saratoga Special, and Travis Stone, the announcer down at Churchill. So I did think with a limited number of interns, I thought we would at least have Samantha come over. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Happy to have you. Talk a little bit about, before we get into the Saratoga Special in particular, your background. You're a college student, correct? Fill us in there.
Yeah, so I was born and raised Boston Spa, graduated 2017 from Boston Spa, but I just graduated this previous May, with my bachelor's from Quinnipiac in marketing, and I'll be going back in less than a week to finish my MBA at St.
How long? Two more years, is that going to be?
No, so I'm in an accelerated program.
Oh, so it overlapped.
I was halfway through my MBA for the last year of my bachelor's.
Very good. Yeah. Well, now I'm curious that you brought up going to school, just finishing and going back.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the end of last year and how the quarantine and the virus affected the end of your school career.
We went home for spring break, and I actually had a trip planned to San Francisco, but things started picking up there, and we decided it was best to just cancel that. So I ended up coming here, staying home for the week, and then we got emails. They kind of just came out of nowhere, like emails saying we aren't coming back, everything's going online. So it was definitely weird. No graduation ceremony, none of that fun stuff with your friends. But, we're going back and doing kind of a half and half, like in-person, online school year, so it'll be weird. I don't know really what to expect, but
I'm curious though. So you had a month and a half or so of online, and how did that work for you? I've talked to parents who have had kids in grade school or maybe junior high or whatnot. For a college student, how did the online work?
I mean, I had taken plenty of online classes throughout my time the last 3 years before quarantine happened, but it's a different environment, especially when you're starting in class. I think it was pretty beneficial in that sense that, like, we started in person, so we made those connections already and, like, established that, like, classroom, like, vibe, I guess, and then kind of transitioning online, the Zoom meetings were helpful, rather than just doing at-home assignments, like, on your own, but, like, being in the Zoom classroom, I think, was more beneficial.
Yeah, it seems like it's got to be tough, so I feel for everybody in your generation that has to go through this, and, you know, knock wood, it winds up sooner rather than later, but, from talking to Tom, I know you're doing some social media work for the Saratoga Special and some marketing work as well, and growing up in Boston Spa, just fill me in. Have you been a horse racing fan, or have you been over here enjoying the racing prior to being tied in with the Saratoga Special?
Absolutely, and I think that's what makes this opportunity so interesting for me, is to see, like, the inner workings of everything that goes on behind the scenes. But, yeah, I grew up going to the races. My parents would wake my brother and I up really early to kind of watch the horses exercise, or go just be a body to kind of go through the turnstiles.
Giveaway day.
Those giveaways, yeah. So those are the happy memories that I have of the Saratoga racetrack. But, I mean, also just going with friends and spending time. It's just a fun place to be, so.
Let's talk a little bit about that, going with friends. And I know, you know, obviously not this year, but the many years, the Travers Day certainly, but other days you go out in the backyard and a lot of young people out there. That's one nice thing about Saratoga. It brings younger fans to the races, and I think exposes them, hopefully makes them lifetime fans. But as you are doing some things on the social media side, and you're of the generation of the social media, I will ask you, because I forget who I had in here the other day, but we were talking a little bit about, not a lot of jockeys now are plugged into social media, and we were talking about how that's so effective to maybe bring in a new generation of fans. Talk about it. Talk about your experience and being of a younger generation, and how important is, I assume now being tied in with the Saratoga Special in particular, maybe you've gone out and looked at the Twitter accounts for other racing organizations and entities. Talk a little bit about how social media, in your opinion, is doing attracting new fans to horse racing, or maybe how it can improve that.
I think Twitter is definitely place to be in terms of sports, betting, everything like that. So, like you said, there are a lot of well-known personalities in horse racing that are very predominantly followed on social media, specifically Twitter. Twitter is really where sports kind of can grow in terms of a younger audience. So I think that's where to focus. But yeah, like you said, that's kind of been my focus in this internship, was to help make the digital transition for a previously all-print publication, and so Twitter has been the number one way that we've been doing that, and obviously we have the Facebook as well, but like you said, that's kind of the older audience, but still good to bring everybody together.
Is that Facebook is a little older than Twitter? Is that how it skews out now?
Yeah. I mean, it's still covered by all the bases. Like, I have my own Facebook. A lot of, like, everybody still has their Facebook, but in terms of engaging the users, Twitter and Instagram typically are for the younger audiences, and then Facebook is how you reach the other audiences.
And you bring up Instagram. I was going to ask you about that, because it does seem like Twitter is kind of prominent with racing organizations, entities, and personalities. Mm-hmm. Maybe Instagram not so much, but Instagram certainly is a prominent social media platform. Does racing do all they can on Instagram, or is it even a platform they should move to?
I don't think there's any harm in moving toward it, but it shouldn't be the sole focus of it. Twitter would be the backbone that I'd focus on, especially if the goal is to reach a younger audience. But yeah, Instagram is obviously a good way to kind of create a family of social media, so it's good to have cover all your bases and kind of have that presence on both Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. But we do have an Instagram, which I've been working with. We post every edition on there, just to kind of get the word out and engage people. We've been running some giveaways, and a lot of people engage with that on Instagram as well.
Fill us in on how the digital version has been doing. Having Tom in here the last few weeks, we tell people, go to thisishorseracing.com, the website, type Saratoga Special into Google, you can find it that way. For those of us from previous years, we certainly remember picking up the hard copy over at the track, or around town. That's a little bit different this year. You have to jump on board. All the same online to get it, but all the same features are there. Again, I love the here and there with the names of the day, the license plate, the work repeating quotes. All of that is still in there. The handicappers are available every day, actually, if you go to This Is Horse Racing. I think we have a nice picture. Yeah, Susie Rasher had the picture there on the Here and There page. Todd Marks does great work as well on the photography side. You can see there the selections from one of the issues of the Saratoga Special. But fill us in on how the digital version has been playing out this year. It seems like, again, looking at social media, a lot of folks are linking and pointing folks to it. It's always such great content, and I assume you're still doing very well.
Right, yeah, thank you. I mean, right when we started, we've seen, I mean, from the first issue to the most recent issue, we've seen at least a 300% increase in readership. So that's been really good, and we're still working hard to get those numbers up. We love to spread our audience far and wide. And what I've been noticing is that a lot of our readers are, I mean, a lot of them are based in Saratoga and loyal friends of the Saratoga town, city, and that whole environment, but also out-of-towners. So the person that won our last giveaway was from Florida. So a lot of people that wish they could be here are kind of engaging with that, which is something I think is really cool.
Are the giveaways an ongoing thing? Because I've seen that it's, yes, it's what, like a gift basket of previous kind of giveaways and Saratoga swag kind of stuff. So the giveaways continue?
So we actually just launched one last night in conjunction with the next two issues. So definitely go check out the Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook to get involved there and have a chance to win some, I think it's around $200 worth of Saratoga merchandise, which is cool.
So on a day-to-day basis, what is your role as far as, are you doing any of the writing for the newspaper?
I've written a couple pieces. The column title that they came up with was Loud and Clear, which I thought was fun.
I like
that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
very good.
Yeah, so I've written a couple pieces, but it's really just like when I feel the wave of inspiration and I feel like it's something worth sharing, I can write it and I'll send it their way, and if they like it, they'll publish it. So
you kind of alluded to this before, but I think it's very true and worth kind of repeating a little bit. For a fan, and I know it worked out for me as well, being doing this, to transition from a fan to a media, it's a lot of fun to get to see the behind the scenes. I mean, it's great for
Absolutely.
Me just sit here every morning with the horses at Clare Court. It's a lot of fun to get the behind the scenes look at things, and it's a little bit special. It's been that way for you?
Absolutely, and I would say especially this season with everything that's being changed and different, to just have the opportunity to be here when other people can't be is really special. And I remember opening day, like, I was fascinated by the fact that I could hear the jockeys talking to the horses while they're running to the finish line, like stuff like that. It was crazy.
That is something I haven't talked about as much, but yeah, we sit up in that auxiliary press box in the turf terrace now, and as they come down the stretch, you can't
hear
them yelling at each other,
and,
which again is a little bit of behind the scenes that even normally we don't get, but in the different era, it's very different. And you know, you said you've been to the track before. Talk a little bit about your experience being here with no fan. For me, it's weird.
It's definitely weird. Some days are peaceful and it's nice to just like be here and kind of embrace all of it. But yeah, I do miss the ability to have a good day with some friends and just kind of bump into people that you never thought you'd see for a couple years, like high school friends that I'd missed seeing around and stuff like that. So the sense of community is definitely something that I long for this season. But that was actually one of the first pieces that I wrote this season, was about visiting all the viewing parties and like how the horseshoe was going, the Adelphi and stuff like that. So it almost feels more like a Saratoga summer, like a day at the races when you're not here.
Interesting. And we've gone to some of the watch parties too. So people are making the best of a bad situation, as it were, but getting some Saratoga flavors. You say the horseshoe. We've been out at Prime at Saratoga National. We have some remotes scheduled down at Bailey's and over at the Diamond Club at the Embassy Suites. And people are finding a way to get a little Saratoga flavor, which is very important. One of the ways to do it also, the digital version of the Saratoga Special. And again, fill us in. Wednesdays and Saturdays is the game plan, right?
Definitely, yep. So we just released one. We have one out today. Go check that out. We have a recap of the Big Alabama Day, as well as next, we'll have them every Wednesday and Saturday until the end of the season, and then one big season recap issue at the very end.
Very good. And I know folks like to follow the handicappers as well. John Sabazian currently doing very, very well.
Yeah.
The handicappers are every day on the website,
yes,
right?
Yes, every day. Check it.
Very good. And Samantha, we appreciate the visit. We certainly. Let me ask you this. I mentioned earlier, you know, marketing, social media, and whatnot. And I mentioned the Saratoga Special, a pipeline to the industry. Would the horse racing industry be something you're looking at potentially to make a career?
Being here, yeah, I'm definitely thinking that way. I mean, when I was looking for internships, I was just looking for digital marketing, and I was lucky enough that Tom Law and my dad are friends through Saratoga's Drivers, so that's how I kind of made that connection here. And yeah, being here, this is definitely something I'd like to keep pursuing.
Very good, because as I say, certainly the Saratoga Special has provided a great training ground for some notables in the industry.
Absolutely.
Maybe we have another one sitting next to us, Samantha Lau. Samantha, we really appreciate the visit and continued success with the Saratoga Special.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Samantha Lau from the Saratoga Special. We'll take a quick break when we come back. Just have a couple of minutes. I pre-taped yesterday with some TRF horses. They have an event coming up on the weekend. So we'll take a quick break and we'll fire up that tape. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Racing Across America. As I said before the break, I went out yesterday and I was petting some of the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation horses out at the farm over by the polo field. Bold Mon and Uptown Joe were out there. But I caught up with our friend Kim Weir from the TRF Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. I wanted to get a little recap on the virtual barbecue they did because of the pandemic this year. The normal barbecue out at the Saratoga Winery became kind of a drive-through with some, you know, some celebrities there and some horses and whatnot. And so I know from everything I read and heard about it was successful, but I wanted Kim to give us a little recap of the barbecue that went on last week in a different kind of a format. And I also wanted her to preview, they have coming up an event on Saturday tied in with old friends at Cabin Creek. So we got both of those from Kim. With a little assistance from Bold Mon, one of the TRF horses, you'll see Bold Mon, quite a character, and a ham bone, too. At one point, I had my camera out on the tripod, and he was ready for his close-up, Mr. DeMille. He kept walking up to the camera, and at one point during the interview, he kind of makes a beeline to get his face right in the camera. But again, Bold Mon, quite a character. You will see it right now. But we'll fire it up. Kim Weir. Again, a little recap of the barbecue from last week and a little preview of the Saturday event they have coming up. If you'd like to meet and greet and pet some horses, all of that with Kim Weir. Thanks.
So, today we had an awesome time at the Saratoga Winery. We are so grateful to everyone who came out for our big adventure. It was a great success. We had it was hot, but it was nice weather. The horses were in their element being greeted and waved at from our guests. People picked up their pies, they picked up their barbecue, they picked up their cocktails, and we had this great lineup of super celebrities, Tom Durkin and Donna Brothers and Ramon Dominguez, Maggie, Steve Bick, everybody was there waving and smiling, and we ended up overselling. We're sold out and oversold, about 210 folks came through. We raised a good amount of money to feed and care for these creatures, and we made our way through a reinvented barbecue. So, thanks to all who supported. Our sponsors were amazing. Our volunteers were incredible. The horses were fairly well behaved. And And the guests were awesome because the smiles and that's really what it was all about. We are so excited. On Saturday, August 22nd, we are bringing Goldmon and Joey to old friends Cabin Creek. And it's their Saturday morning open house. They do an open barn every Friday and Saturday at Old Friends Cabin Creek. But this Saturday, Goldmon is also coming to be a part of it. He's also coming to be a part of this filming. So Goldmon and Joey will be there to meet and greet their friends, and also for us to talk a little bit about horse sponsorship, which is one of our most important ways of caring for the herd, and adoption. Both Goldmon and Joey are candidates to go home to their very own families, which we would love and they would love, as you can tell. So it is 9 to 1 at Old Friends Cabin Creek. No charge, donations are accepted, but come out and meet this guy in person. He's pretty sweet.
Again, the event coming up on Saturday, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation in conjunction with Old Friends at Cabin Creek. And I was just pulling up, if you're not familiar, commentator, Zippy Chippy, Will's Way, some of the horses, at some of the familiar names at Old Friends at Cabin Creek. But you can also meet Goldmon, who I had the pleasure of meeting myself yesterday at the TRF barn. Well, they use a barn out by the polo field, and Uptown Joe as well. Met both of them and enjoyed it. And you can get the chance to do that also on Saturday. It goes from 9 until 1 this Saturday at Old Friends at Cabin Creek. That's on Sand Creek Road in Greenfield. Type in Old Friends at Cabin Creek into Google and you'll get the website. You can get directions there. But again, if you want to, you know, you can't come to the track, but if you want to get up close and personal with some horses and some former well-known horses, the lovable loser Zippy Chippy, and as I say, the character Goldmon, you can do it on Saturday. Old Friends at Cabin Creek, the joint effort with Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, 9 to 1, that's Sand Creek Road in Greenfield. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Thanks to Samantha Loud, the intern from the Saratoga Special, who, again, who knows, maybe a few years down the road, she also will be a notable name in the racing industry, as the Saratoga Special has been known to produce. Also, our friend Tim Wilkin from the Times Union, appreciate his stopping by. And top of the show was Gary Contessa with Shug McGahey. So thanks to both of them. Our man up here, Mick Richards, putting the tape together, thanks to him. And I will also thank, on a daily basis, doing a great job, Brian, Dino, Danny, Brian in the trailer up here, Dino and Danny down in the studio down in Albany, who help put the show together every day. Not help, they put the show together every day. I'm the guy that's helping. I'm just out here shooting the breeze, as it were. So thanks to them. I'd like to at least tout them at least once or twice a week if I think of it, and I did today. So thanks to all the guys behind the scenes for the great work. Just looking, I think I've covered everything, so we will wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Again, some great racing this afternoon. Don't forget, during the season here, we also have nighttime racing on the network, Capital OTB TV and Capital OTB Bet, so there's Thoroughbred nighttime racing available. So plenty of opportunities for great action this afternoon and this evening. As far as our programming here from the Clare Court set, we'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. for the handicapper support. So, we'll see you then.
Racing Across America with Seth Merrow. Racing Across America has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier online wagering site in New York State. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The Leah Auto Group. To search their inventory, schedule a service appointment, or find a dealership near you, visit LeahCars.com. Leah Cars for life. And the new Capital OTB mobile app. Wager anytime, anywhere. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.